This programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee. Welcome to episode 3 of In the Elf List Time. I'm Marita Kelly. Today, I examine the advances in animal health, husbandry, science and technology. Later on, I visit farms to see some of the health issues that have hit Ireland. But first, I'm at Machrana Farmer headquarters to meet with Derry Dillon, Agriculture and Rural Affairs Manager, to look at how husbandry and science have greatly evolved with a focus moving to maximise production and profits.
Marita, there's definitely been a lot of changes in farming, particularly from the day where you'd have mixed enterprises on farms. You might have a bit of tillage that you'd be growing for the animals, such as barley, oats, and also for the household. You'd have maybe a few pigs, you'd have cattle, sheep, and maybe a dairy cow or two for the house. Certainly, it has dramatically changed now. Farmers are becoming more specialised and also more intensive. Dairy farmers now are generally just dairy farmers. Beef farmers specialise in beef, and your tillage farmer specialises in growing crops and cereals.
And Derry, if we look at it from a dairying point of view, we've made serious developments.
Certainly, there's been massive changes in the way farmers look at dairying and approach dairying. One time it was how many litres or gallons would a cow be able to produce in the year. Now we've gone to the idea of kgs of milk solids, and I suppose we're taking a lot of this from the New Zealand experience, and a lot of farmers travelled to New Zealand over the years, and we now talk on kgs of solids, because at the end of the day that's what you're getting paid for. If you have a lot of watery milk, you're not getting paid for water, and co-ops are collecting water, so they want to collect solids. Your solids are your fat and your proteins, so they're the important things. That's the new lingo. It's kgs of milk solids, and that's another one of these what they call KPIs, key performance indicators, that farmers are now looking at. They benchmark one another from in terms of how good the solids are for a dairy cow.
What about the move from bull to AI?
Again, there's been changes there. You had your stock bull that farmers would run, and sure, the genetic merit of the stock bull could be anything. It could be a very good bull, or it could be a mixed bull, or a neighbour's bull could have broken in, or anything like that. So we definitely moved to the idea of artificial insemination, where we're trying to improve the genetic merits and breed for traits that are important. So if you're breeding for particular traits like fertility or increased, again, milk solids, proteins, or whatever it is that you're breeding for, you're specialising and you're extracting these genes, and you're breeding this particular type of gene that you can get from a catalogue, basically, and the AI man comes along, and you have the next generation of cow that's coming along will hopefully be better because you're breeding them to a better type of set of genes, and that's the whole idea of using AI.
And what about the idea of crop rotation? Has that changed?
It certainly has, to the idea of having numerous crops in over your farm. That day is sort of gone too, where your larger areas of sort of one crop or single crops, there is still crop rotation naturally, because in order to get the maximum out of any one crop, you should have a different crop the following year or every number of years anyway to change around crops. Certainly we're growing less and less crops. However, there is a bit of a change coming in terms of the Common Agricultural Policy, where you have this whole area of greening of the cap, as they call it. So there's a requirement on tillage farmers to have maybe up to 3 crops grown on their farm in order to be able to get the greening payment. So you might have some bit of a change back again, because there was a lot of monocultures and single crops grown in big areas of ground. Now, it mightn't have been as much a case in Ireland. It's more like the continent in France and countries like that, where you could have a couple of thousand acres in one type of crop. But in order to bring more crop diversity back under the new Common Agricultural Policy, you're going to have a minimum of 3 crops growing. So that's crop diversification.
What's this green thing?
Greening is, I suppose, Commissioner Chiles, who's the agricultural commissioner, he brought in this new idea of greening of the common agricultural policy. So that's something new in the next CAP. You could say it's to keep the environmentalists happy in Europe, and that was the trade-off, that we have the green agriculture. So if you're a grassland farmer, once you are a farmer that relies on grassland, you are green by that nature, because you're growing grass. That's green product. But in terms, if you're in the tillage sector, now you're going to have to leave certain areas for ecology. So your ditches and your margins, maybe up to 5% of your area will have to have ecology, and then you'll have to have three different crops in order to get your greening payment as part of your single farm payment. So it's a new dimension to the CAP. We're only getting used to it. It'll be coming in 2015, but it's interesting to see that we might have more crops back on farms rather than less crops, in a sense.
The number of young farmers we have, Jerry, are quite worrying. Are there any changes to CAP to facilitate them?
We have a new measure on the single farm payment, which is a particular 25% top up for young farmers who are taking over in their first 5 years of farming. So for the first time ever, there has been a recognition of young farmers in the single farm payment. So that's very positive, and it's something that had been developed originally from MOCRA back in 2010-2011, and we put it through our European counterparts in Europe, our young farmer organisation CEJA. It worked through and came through as a measure for supporting young farmers in this CAP. So that's good. It's a recognition that we haven't enough young farmers. We've only 6% of our farmers under the age of 35. They recognise that in the long term there'd be a crisis in agriculture, because we won't have enough young people coming through. So this is a measure to try and change that, to try and improve the number of young farmers, or enhance the number of young farmers that are coming through. That's one particular measure in the Common Agricultural Policy.
There's a strong focus on dairying in Ireland, with the progression in science and technology surrounding it very apparent. The view on the importation of dairy breeds has changed a lot, as well as the artificial insemination used. So I've come to the Centre of Excellence in Moor Park in Fermoy to meet with Tagus Regional Manager Gerard McMahon.
In the late 50s and the early 60s, the dominant breed was the Shorthorn. It was sort of on the way out then, and then that was taken over by the Friesian, which we now call the British Friesian. AI had become into vogue fairly strong. In the late 70s and early 80s, the Holstein Friesian came in. Most of those were imported from Europe, America and Canada. They had come from backgrounds where they would do up to 2,000 gallons. The old breeding indexes looked after type and production. The new breeding in the EBO now takes into account production is roughly about half the index now. 30% or maybe 40% of the index is to do with fertility. New Zealand imports of semen became very important there. Less imported straws from Canada, America and continent. A lot of them came in from New Zealand, where they have a grass-based system and fertility was more important for them. But last 3 or 4 years now, most of the bulls going into AI have been bred on Irish farms. Bulls generally, a proven bull when it was into AI 10-15 years ago was 7 or 8 years anyway. Now bulls are going into AI at 15 months, and a new generation of bulls takes over every year. So the rate of genetic progress is much faster.
The Jersey crosses have become more prevalent, causing a certain amount of disquiet. At the moment, their bull calves are virtually unsaleable.
You make up to 2 to 5 euros for the Jersey cross ones, whereas a good Friesian bull calf could make 100. That's the sort of the range in them. On the crossbreeds, they have higher fertility, they have lower body weight, and they can be stocked a little bit higher. And that research people see that as the way forward, that you'd have these crossbred herds, that you'd have a higher output.
Many years ago, farmers used 2 to 3 main bulls, but now they can use numerous sires, speeding up the genetic process. However, despite the advances in science, sometimes you just need a flair for it.
Some farmers could see a cow about to mount another cow. More farmers would need to see 3 cows stacked on top of the other to see a cow in the area. And it depends on people's eye for stock. And that's the important thing. No, the records are very important in for farming like that. People need to know, expect when a cow is due to recycle if she hasn't gone in calf, and people need to have a look at it. The fertility level of some bulls are better to get cows in calf than others, and they have to keep looking at their ones to see. Some bulls may not be doing as well by putting cows in calf as others, so that needs to be monitored. The biggest difference between what we call high genetic merit cows for milk and ones that wouldn't is the high genetic cow for milk partakes more of her energy for milk production than looking after herself.
Typical woman. Even with all the advances we've made, outbreaks and diseases over the years have resulted in major implications for Irish farming today. I accompany veterinarian Gerry Crowley as he visits some farms to see some of the major health issues that have hit Ireland. So Gerry, BVD is one of the most recent health concerns in cattle. What is it?
BVD is another viral disease, bovine viral diarrhoea. I suppose it's another highly contagious of the more modern viruses that have come. A lot of these diseases came into Ireland through imported cattle. The BVDs and the IBRs, the yonis and that, we would have actually been free of those. And back in the 80s, any animals coming into Ireland would have been quarantined in Spike Island and would have been tested for various diseases and would only have been released into the animal population or on the farm they were going to after they'd passed strict testing in the quarantine station. BVD has become a big issue. It's a virus, and like any virus, if you pick it up and you're a healthy individual, you're going to create an immune response in your body and that will fight off the infection. The problem with BVD is that if it's a pregnant female that picks it up at the early stages of pregnancy, her calf can be born as a virtual BVD factory. They call them a persistently infected or a permanently infected animal. And that animal, when it's infected in the womb, its immune system isn't developed enough to know it's infected. So the infection survives in its body totally, you know, unknown to the animal's developing immune system. So the animal will never create an immune response to it. That animal will literally shed millions of virus particles in every mil of body fluid, whether it's tears, saliva, milk, everything contains a lot of BVD virus. The issue with attempting to eradicate it is it's one of these production diseases. In modern Irish agriculture, there's a big emphasis on compact calving and having your cows calving at the right time of year. And if you have an issue like BVD in your herd, you know, your fertility and your conception rates could drop by a third. You know, when you're looking for compact calving and efficiency in a modern system, you want your cows to calve in a 12 to 14 week period for a dairy farmer. So if anything happens during your breeding season or the early part of the pregnancy that's going to result in that pregnancy resulting in an abortion, that animal is going to be useless to you for production for the following year, and your replacement costs and your culling costs are going to be higher.
What happens to the PIs?
Currently, the PIs are, you're notified that an animal has tested positive. And a PI, strictly speaking, is an animal that tests positive for the virus twice, 3 to 4 weeks apart. An animal that's identified as a PI cannot be sold onto another farm. Currently, the scheme is it's voluntary what you do with it, but once a PI is identified, the advice for the farmer would be to cull that animal. Because it's only going to act as a source of virus on their farm, and it's going to result in serious disease implications for the rest of the herd. The two areas where BVD causes big issues on a farm are basically in calf rearing and cow fertility. If you've got a PI in a calf shed, the rest of the calves are going to pick up this virus. It's a virus that causes immunosuppression, so their immune system has been pulled down, and any other disease they get is going to be more serious if BVD is there as well.
As a result, all calves born from the 1st of January 2013 onwards must now be tested for the virus. Another one of the newer illnesses to hit Ireland is Smallenberg, a particularly nasty disease.
Well, Smallenberg was, it's another virus. first discovered in Germany in a village called, or town called Schmalenberg. That's where it was first identified. And it spread across Europe, and it seemed to travel with the wind. It spread by mosquitoes or midges. Once a mosquito has been infected by the virus, Schmalenberg virus, the females stay infected for life, or that's what they think. I suppose the one thing I want to say about Schmalenberg is that it's a relatively new disease, so it only started in 2011. And the amount that's known about it at this stage is probably relatively limited. The current theory is that the mosquito female, when she's infected, is infected for life, and all her offspring will be infected. And if they carry the Schmalenberg virus, if they bite an animal for a feed of blood, which they need, they can infect the animal with the Schmalenberg virus. And that animal can clear the virus quite quickly from their system. And they've actually shown that they clear it in less than a week. But the difficulty, again, with the Schmalenberg virus, a little bit like the BED, is that if it's a pregnant female, that's when the problems occur, because a healthy adult animal, or a healthy animal that's not pregnant, getting bitten and infected with Schmalenberg virus, their immune system will clear it in quite a short space of time. But if it's a sheep that's pregnant, and they say between 4 and 8 weeks pregnant for a sheep, and between 8 and 14 weeks pregnant for a cow, that's when it's most significant, because the offspring, again, you can get fetal abnormalities, and you get calves born with short jaws, their neck is twisted, every bone in their body is fused together, so they can't, there's no flexibility, the cows or the sheep can't give birth to these calves. And, you know, in 2013, the spring of 2013, we would have seen a significant amount of it in sheep, and that was generally where we tended to see it, was in early January. And in March and April in cows, we saw a significant amount of it.
Can you vaccinate against it, or what can be done to prevent it?
You can inoculate against it. There would have been a number of sheep farmers would have inoculated in 2013 against it, but the vaccine only became available after the main cattle breeding period, so there wasn't any cows vaccinated in 2013. There's low levels of it in 2014. You know, I think that the amount of vaccine uptake, it's definitely not going to be as high as might have been if we had vaccine available last year.
In contrast to Schmalenberg and BVD, which are relatively new strains, TB and brucellosis have been around for as long as I can remember. The Department of Agriculture has a structure in place where herds of cattle are tested for both diseases annually.
Like, I suppose basically, you know, TB is another contagious disease that spreads between animals, and when animals are affected by TB, you know, it's a chronic debilitating disease, so the animal will lose drive, and, you know, they're not going to produce, or they're not going to perform. They're not going to produce milk. They're not going to produce beef very well. So if it spreads rapidly in a herd, you know, you're going to have an underproducing herd. So I suppose the system that is in Ireland, I suppose it has been modified. It's been called an eradication program, but it's a long-standing eradication program at this stage. But I suppose there has been rapid progress in the last number of years, because the number of reactors in Ireland has halved since 2008 per annum, and it used to be over 40,000 reactors per year. Now I think it's less than 18,000 per year. So there's a lot of progress has been made, and you know, they've introduced some measures in recent years, the department, which basically they've increased the testing of herds in a located contiguous to a herd where there is reactors. So they're focusing more on where the disease is. And they've also introduced a vaccination program in the last few years where badgers are vaccinated. And I suppose the wildlife, the badgers and the deer, if they get infected, they can be quite good at spreading it. And I suppose the aim with those vaccination programs is trying to protect them from getting infected in the first place. And it will be modelled on the French developed a model in Europe for controlling rabies, and they vaccinated all the feral animals, and rabies on the continent has become much less of an issue. So that's what they're trying. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to control it in a similar fashion. And if it'll work, if they can find the technique for successfully vaccinating the badgers, you know, that would be one source of acting as a reservoir. The badgers can act as a reservoir for the infection in the countryside. The deer would also be quite a good reservoir in this part of the world because we have a lot of forestry. So there's a pretty large deer population in East Cork and West Waterford.
What part of the body does TB affect?
It usually comes in through the lungs. It's usually, they can either ingest it in feed, where they need a very high infective dose, or if they breathe it in air droplets. I think as few as 5 bacteria can cause an animal to become infected if they take it in a droplet in their lungs.
Really?
As few as 5, yeah.
That's tiny. If we didn't slaughter them and we just isolated them, what would the outcome actually be?
I suppose disease doesn't progress through every animal the exact same way. Mm-hmm. So some animals would fight it better and would be able to localise it within their body a little better, whereas in other animals it can become more generalised. And if it becomes more generalised, you know, you're going to get a more rapid end outcome from the disease. There's a cull and slaughter policy for reactor animals, and there would be, you know, compensation in place for the herd owner.
The control and ultimate eradication of bovine tuberculosis and brucellosis is essential for the well-being and future development of our livestock production for both export and domestic markets. BSE is one of the illnesses that caused quite a stir, or to give it its full title, bovine what?
Spongiform encephalopathy.
I'd say that'd be the one, all right.
Yeah.
Commonly known as mad cow disease.
Mad cow disease.
What is it?
It's basically a disease that affects the animal's brain. It's closely associated with a human disease called Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, for another complicated name for you. CJD for short. It's basically ingesting spinal tissue or brain tissue from an infected individual. The difficulty with CJD in humans is that the incubation period, or the time from when you take it in to the time you become clinical, can be up to 25 years. Whereas with BSE, it was usually adult animals that were affected. It was a very distressing disease for animals, obviously, but for the farmers as well. Animals would, literally overnight, the animal's behaviour would change, and it usually was induced by some type of stress, whether it was a calving or moving from even a simple thing like moving the animals out of housing and taking them onto pasture. The difference between walking on concrete and walking on grass, the animal would stand at the edge.
And wouldn't want to go any further.
Wouldn't want to go a little bit any further, yeah.
But it's terrible to be looking at them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it was like I would have seen quite a few episodes of, you know, where, you know, they had their behaviour had changed so much. And it happened, one client where, you know, it happened in the milking parlour, and the cow just, they call it mad cow disease, and the cow just got violent and smashed up a whole lot of his parlour. Like, and he wasn't, you know, the parlour was replaceable, but the damages the cow would do to themselves was quite severe.
What actually happens to them?
Well, it'll progress, like, and as it progresses, they lose more, you know, their motor function, which allows them to control what their body is doing. So the few cases that I saw at terminal stages that we had to intervene, the animal would be down on their side, trashing all 4 limbs, and you know, they'd often be accompanied by bellowing, and, you know, the animal would be in severe discomfort.
I love them.
So,
can they pass that on?
No, it doesn't pass on. It's generally passed on in the feed. Like, so it was actually the issue got most of the credit for causing BSE was there was changes in the law for producing meat and bone meal, where the temperature for treating the product was reduced because industry was saying it was too expensive to produce this byproduct. In reducing the temperature for processing the material to create meat and bone meal, they actually this pathogen was allowed to survive and became a big issue.
Following the diagnosis of BSE for the first time in Ireland in 1989, a number of risk management measures were introduced. Former IFA President John Bryan recalls the situation.
The UK government got very concerned, and there's this famous speech that was made in the House of Commons where some minister said there was going to 1 million people die by 2010. And the reality is the amount of people that died of CJD across the world is no more than died prior to it. So there was no statistical change in it. But the regulations that were brought in Europe cost hundreds of billions, not just billions. In the UK from 1996 up to probably, I'd say 2006, 10 years, every animal over 30 months was destroyed. Perfect beef, that there was nothing wrong with. But again, it was an overreaction. But for me as a beef farmer in Ireland, I was farming beef from 1980 to 1996. I fed cattle over those periods. Price was relatively stable in old money, a pound per pound, up to maybe a pound and 10. And I often remember I was at a protest in Dublin prior to this, when beef price was about 1.02, 1 pound and 2 pence a pound in old money. And then the BSE hit. Over a month, maybe 6-8 weeks, I forget the exact, couldn't sell cattle. It became impossible. The Irish market closed down. There was no outlets. A whole load of factories closed. There was no outlet. And eventually, with European support and other things, there was a decision to purchase animals over 30 months for the struck. Effectively, Europe was banned from exporting to most of the world, but it changed the value. So I sold all my cattle from 1980 to 1996 above a pound. I sold the rest of them with the European support in 1996 and 92, and in 1997 at 82. So cattle dropped over 20%. Our costs didn't drop, the inputs. So it was a huge hit. It meant the cattle you had borrowed to buy were worth less. It meant your sales. So it put huge pressure on the whole system, and there was a worry across Europe.
In 1990, a ban on the feeding of meat and bone meal to ruminant animals was introduced.
Now, taking meat and bone meal out of the bovine food chain was right, but there was no need to take it out of the pork and the chicken, because it is a cheap source of protein that is used in most parts of the world. It's used as protein for poultry and for pigs. But it shouldn't have been. It was the drive to push prices down and feeding it to bovines was a bad move and should never have happened. If you played back the speech that was made with the House of Commons then, you would expect a few million people to be dead now. But there was a huge destruction, and at a period where cull cows might have been worth €1,000 down here in the south, they were burning them in the north, which was perfectly good beef. So once they started removing the brain and the spinal cord, they could have allowed that beef into the food chain. But I can tell you, if it cost the European Commission 10, 20, 30 or 40 billion, it cost farmers on the ground even more through extra regulation, extra cost and reduced market value in stock. It took us more than 20 years to get back to the price we had prior to it.
That's massive.
That's massive for the costs we had. I often quote the figure. I started farming in 1980. I left the Guards. The last year I worked in the Guards, I grossed €4,000. You could buy a small car. I bought an Opel Cadet for €4,000. Beef was a pound. 20 years later, beef was a pound. To buy that family car, you'd want €20,000. And the average salary of a Guard, a nurse or a teacher was about €30,000. So relative terms, that was the change. The costs associated with agriculture are huge. The input costs are huge. And yet, a lot of the products we're selling them at the same price or a small bit more.
The advances in animal health, husbandry, science and technology are evident all over the country. But it wasn't straightforward, and we were faced with many challenges along the way. Join me in the next episode when I look at milking equipment, machinery and winter fodder. In the Elfless Time was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee. Presented and produced by Marita Kelly and edited by Sean Healy. A Community Radio Yall production.